have the ground game. We've actually built the practices that people aspire to create.
History will prove one of us correct.
Wait. You're not letting me finish, bro.
This is how you become bulletproof.
Hey, you know, Craig, you know what Randy and I were just talking about, by the way, before you joined? It was great. We were talking about Randy's most favorite place on earth. Do you know where it is?
St. Bart's.
Yep.
Yeah. I know it well. Yeah.
I lost you guys. Yeah. I froze.
I was just there last week and I was saying, man, I was like, Randy, it's such a cool island. Every time we go, we never have enough time there. And he's like, yeah, it's like Paris on the water in the Caribbean.
So it's really not like Paris at all is what you're saying. Anyway, for those of you who don't know Randy by now, Randy's been a frequent and recurring guest on the podcast and personal friend for a long time, like 15, 20 years.
Podcast summit and mastermind. He comes and speaks to the mastermind. So
yeah.
So you don't throw shade at him just as a podcast guest, Craig.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Randy should need no introduction to any of you guys by now. The one thing I do want to say is that Randy's been, like I always say, a blessing in my life because he's helped me navigate business and real estate. And the one thing is Randy, I do my due diligence on everything through proxy. So if a smart person likes something, I'm like, good, I'm good to go. And if multiple smart people that are independently not connected to each other, that's even a bigger go for me. But what I love about Randy is...
Can I make one caveat to that? You do everything by proxy, not just your diligence.
I agree with that. I'm a leader. I'm a multiplier, guys. You're an adder. I'm a multiplier. Some do addition. I do multiplication. So anyway, listen, I can get the information I need, Peter. Just like I said this morning, I just may have to make one or two phone calls. But my brain is not.
I'm saying I'm the dummy, not you. You have figured out how to like be like, hey, we should do this, and then a bunch of people go to work towards what you thought they should do, and you're like, right. Hey, I'm gonna go to the ranch. Let me know we're done. Let me know when we're done.
Yeah, we did do it. We did it together.
Yeah, we did it.
So anyway, so Randy's brought me a lot of real estate, and I've done a lot of real estate deals with Randy, and every single time it's like, wait, Randy, you're involved? Okay, Scott's involved, and so and so's involved, and Bernard's involved. I'm good. He's like, I know, but I want you to spend an hour with me and go through the deal together. I'm like, holy shit, Randy, please don't do that.
I hate when you don't look at the deal. I hate when you don't look at the deal. I'm trying to educate you.
I know, but Randy, it's good enough for you. I always say this. It's like, I like to eat chocolate cake. I don't want to learn how to make it. So, but Randy, like this is case in point. So what Randy will do is like, I need an hour of your time. And you see this thing called MOIC. Do you know what that stands for, Craig? I'm like, yes, Randy, money on invested capital. He's like, good, you're listening to me. And you know what IRR stands for?
Well, it stands for multiple, not money. Well, whatever. But anyway.
So anyway, I'm going to tune out. The rest there. Of this podcast on, is not come for on, me. Bud. No, I just listen. I think this podcast is an extremely valuable one. And the reason why we've decided to do this is because we talk so much about real estate and we arm people and we get people excited. And what do they go do? They go out and buy the first piece of real estate that they can get their hands on. And they send us the deal afterwards and say, hey, what do you think? And we ask the question, well, have you invested already? Yeah, I just sent 200 grand. And like, okay, it's fine. But we really wish you would have told us beforehand because we would have never touched that real estate deal. So this is like a public service announcement, if you will, because Randy brought a deal to you and me, Peter, and said in full disclosure that there's room in this deal and there's a low enough minimum that many people can invest in it. So
can I pause you there for a second? Because I think this is what other people do a lot, Craig.
Yeah.
Is, hey, I'm going to go buy a multifamily deal by myself in my town and manage it. And if you've ever done that before, you will want to slam your pinky in a car door.
Because I'm doing one right now with that shopping center. I was there yesterday.
Yes. Or Sunday. So I think that is the gateway. People being like, hey, I think I'm going to try and get a rental property or I'm going to get multifamily. And then they forget that they now are the landlord working for probably, you know, a cheap hourly rate. And so what you're about to talk about is kind of the elevation of the deal where you can still appreciate all the returns, still get the tax benefits, but you're not getting called at 11:30 at night saying that the refrigerator is broken or the AC is broken.
Or the clock toilet. Sorry, Craig. Yeah. And there's another layer to that too. And this is not also the dental real estate guys that are going to charge you $20, $40, $60, $100,000 to teach you how to do said management of duplex in your town And by the way, just personal note, I have a shopping center in Stuart, and I told the story, but I never told on the podcast, but the lady didn't have a lease. And I kept telling her, like, why don't we just sign a 6-month lease, go through season, because it's seasonal down in Stuart, Florida, and the summers are very dead. She goes, no, I understand. Just try to re-rent. It's fine. So sure enough, I get someone to rent, 60 days to kick her out or to tell her she has to vacate. Actually, I'm required for 30. I gave her 60. And she's threatening to call the local newspaper to say that Dr. Spodak, the dentist, is going to kick her and her family out of their family-owned restaurant on Christmas. And I'm like, I need this.
Jeez.
I've had a shopping center up there for 2 years. I haven't taken a single distribution. I like it. I'm happy I'm doing it. But holy shit, is it a learning episode. And I had these other deals with Randy, like 30 days after closing, they start getting money, just shows up magically. It's amazing. So anyway, getting back on point, we had this deal. We subscribed it very quickly, but I still thought it was valuable for Randy to go through what he always tries to do with me, which is to try to help me understand how to become wealthy and do it in the proper way. So Randy, I just want to say thank you for doing what you do, that you pour into our audience and pour into everybody that you know. And for those that are listening, you're going to get some value, but you may want to also watch, because we're going to go through slides of a deck. And a deck is the presentation, and we're going to boil it down to very simple terms of what is good and what is not good. So Randy, thank you for being here.
And you guys worked on this specific deal that we're talking about, you guys independently, Craig, because I know that's always been a mission of yours, is to kind of bring real estate to, you know, our Bulletproof masterminders. And now we're kind of bringing, you know, awareness to our audience. But you're right, we talk about it a lot. But you guys worked on this deal to kind of beg and plead the capital or the partner to kind of let us sponsor a deal with this, right? Let us have a lower number too.
Because the first deal I ever went in with Randy, it was my investment was 400 grand. And I was just trying to be, I was just inviting myself to it. I said, Randy, can I get into with you guys? Can I go with you and Scott? And he let me in, and I couldn't really tell him that was like everything I had when I put the deal in. And then I didn't want to ask him what MOIC is or IRR, because I was like in the big leagues. I just had to like fake it. So I was like, okay, yeah, the MOICs, that sounds great. Yeah, I love MOICs. Like I had no idea. So anyway.
So guys, I have never been so quiet on the first 5 minutes.
I was thinking,
yeah, we alpha dogged you, bro.
No, it was great. It's your audience, and you have a lot of messages to get out. I have some things though that I want to share with you. So Craig, I love it when you tell the story about the shopping center, right? Because everybody, when they start, you know, you get out of school, you get your first job, or you start a practice or what have you, and you're working really hard to try to cover your nut, and then you're either starting a family or whatever, and you just need more income. And when the income comes toward you, it just runs away just as quickly, because you got to spend it on stuff, right? And then this magical point happens. And some people, it happens when they're 23, and some people, they're 39 or 59. But suddenly they get more money than they need for funding their business or their lifestyle. And now you go from becoming a worker to an investor, right? And the great thing about having extra money to invest is every dollar is like a little employee, and you're putting it to work, and you're asking it to do work and to provide a return for you. And if everybody could think of that extra cash that they have in their savings account or in their business or wherever, it's like every one of those dollars, I know it feels good to look at it and hold it and be able to have access to it, but if it's sitting there too long, it's not working for you. And my goal is for your people to get their dollars working for them in the most meaningful, correct, conservative, profitable ways they can, right? Don't lose money. Try to make money, and then all the things that come along with that. But when you talk about real estate deals, and you talk about the one that you do directly that gives you some frustration, and should you have done this, and you like the ones I do with you, there's like three different types of real estate, right? What you like is private equity real estate, where a good sponsor, a good operator puts a deal together, offers investors to come in as limited partners to ride along in the deal. And that's private equity real estate. And that is a great way to invest in real estate, especially if you're busy running a business or a practice like most of your listeners. Another way is direct ownership, right? Peter, to your point, let's say they went to a seminar and they go, God, I gotta diversify. I gotta own some real estate. So they go buy a duplex in their hometown. And now they're fixing the duplex up. They're dealing with tenants. If they hire a property manager, usually the cost of the property manager wipes out any of the returns on the property. So they're not really efficient at deploying that capital. Now, if they're lucky and they're in a town where the values are escalating, they may do okay with that kind of thing. But that's direct ownership versus private equity. And then the third way is private equity in a fund structure. And that's where you invest your money into a fund with many other investors. And the fund manager goes out and buys several pieces of real estate. And you share in the economics of all of them.
Okay? Is that a REIT?
That would be like a REIT or just okay. A big fund structure, like an evergreen fund, right? Where money comes in and comes out every month through a pool of thousands of investors. So what I like is direct ownership. Craig's not enjoying that right now, but that's because Craig's been running a practice or what have you. I've been in the real estate business for 30 years, so I like owning real estate. I'm okay with it, and I've got property managers or what have you, and I have a little system to deal with that. But it does have more headaches, I will agree. I also invest in fund structures where you invest money with a pool of investors and create a big pool of capital. And the fund manager's job is to go out and find good real estate investments for that money. But they are now, when you put all that money in, they're obligated to go out and find deals. So it may not be a good time to buy real estate, but if they've got $100 million in their fund, they have to go out and buy real estate. It's their mandate. So I don't love the fund structure as much. Private equity real estate where it's deal specific is actually my favorite because I don't have to manage it, but I share in all the economics of it and it's deal specific. So this particular deal that Craig and I brought to the group through our partner, Peter Vondre, we found a deal, which is a specific commercial piece of real estate in a northern state. And we did the economics on it. We said we'd like to own this asset, right? All the economics are good. And I know we're going to show the deck and get into those. And then we knew we needed to raise X amount of funds. And normally we would do a deal like this ourselves. But in this case, we said, hey, this would be a great one for, I think, originally the mastermind group. And so we needed to raise $2.5 million, of which the three of us and the other partner put in, you know, maybe $700,000 or $800,000 of the deal. And then we raised $1.5 million or $1.7 million from investors. And that deal sold out very quickly and was fully subscribed. And so now what we've done is we've brought a
7 days,
deal.
By the way.
Yeah. So we bought a great deal, specific deal to the group. A bunch of people jumped in and are doing this deal, and we're going to go through the economics, but we're going to have monthly distributions. We own the real estate. We're part of a small group specific to this deal. And what I like about that is if we bring another deal in, you know, whether it's every 90 days or you never know when you're not obligated to buy something, you're not going to make a bad deal. So sometimes you get two or three. Yeah, sometimes you'll get two or three good deals that'll hit you this summer. Sometimes you have a 4, 5, 6 month dry spell where you can't find the right opportunity.
And by the way, that's a tell, Randy, not to cut you, but like I've been asking over the last 2 years, Peter, Vondre, and Lance and all those guys, like, hey, is there any deals out there? To which all of them have said no. I had lunch with Peter Vondre 1 year ago. This has been going on for 1 year. This is our first one we got in a year. So the bad guys have tons of deal flow. The good guys are selective.
Yeah, it's been, listen, when interest rates are rising, the price of real estate falls. So now think about that. Rates are rising. So the value of the real estate based on the cash flow it puts out has to fall if it costs more money to buy it. And usually people are unwilling to pay higher interest rates and buyers are unwilling to accept lower prices. So as interest rates are rising and values are falling, nothing trades. Everything gets sticky because buyers and sellers haven't had a meeting of the minds yet. Now that we've had the higher interest rates for a year and everybody kind of has found an equilibrium, now there's land sellers where if they want to sell the property, they just have to sell it in today's environment. So it's kind of like they've accepted their fate. By the same token, buyers accept that I can't get a 3% interest rate on a commercial piece of property, but maybe I can get 6.5%. right? And if the economics work, then it's okay. It's just a reset at lower price on the real estate, higher cost of capital. So, and that's what happened. So now deals are starting to shake loose again. And then you get into this tailwind tsunami effect. When rates start coming down, prices haven't gone up yet, then everybody's a buyer. And then we'll have a lot of competition in finding deals in that respect. Each one is like a needle in the haystack, right? And when you have capital to invest and you're not going to do it yourself, you want to find best in class operators. And when you do, you get access to deal flow. Most people don't have access to deal flow. And if they do, it's low quality deal flow. Like, you'll find deals all over the internet where people are raising money at $10,000 and $20,000 an investor, and they fee you to death, and they're mediocre. Because if they were a really good operator, they would raise the price of capital for each deal, and they'd get a higher caliber, smaller group of pool of money to invest in these deals, right? What I like is deals that are going to be $100,000 up to $250,000 in deal size, not deals that are $500,000 to $1 million or more, because it wipes out a lot of the investing, you know, public and opportunity. So the deal we brought to the table was $100,000 minimum. And I think of the group, most of our people put in 100, some 150, a couple 250. So anyway, but Peter, let's go ahead and talk about the deal, unless there's anything else big picture.
Hey everybody, let's hang out in Scottsdale, Arizona. Join Pete and me at the 2024 Bulletproof Summit at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale. Immerse yourself in innovation and inspiration, unite and strengthen your team, and earn 16 CE credits. That's June 14th and 15th. Register at bulletproofsummit.com. We can't wait to connect with you and your entire team. See you soon, guys.
Great question. So high level, real estate is considered an alternative investment. And that makes it like a dirty word, but it just means alternative to stocks and bonds. We all grow up and learn about investing, and we think in terms of stocks and bonds, the stock market. That's where you invest. So we get our jobs, we start our life, we get a 401k, we start putting money into the stock market, right? So the rich don't invest that way. The rich have a asset allocation where they invest in real estate, stocks, bonds, digital assets, whatever it is, right? There's a core group of assets that are available to put money into, and they invest in all of them, and they weight it differently into different buckets. You are correct. Real estate is the heaviest weighted bucket. The average private office, which is large wealthy families in America, has 35 to 40% of their entire net worth in real estate and less than 25 in stocks. Yet when I talk to most of the people in your network, in the Bulletproof network, they have a net worth of 500, a million, 1 million, 5, 2 million, and 90% of it is in public equities. Rich people would never do that, right? Rich people would be more diversified. And diversified doesn't mean more stocks in your portfolio.
You say public equities, Randy, just I like to break down to, sometimes we gloss over terms like MOIC and public equities. Basically, the stock market, Apple stock, Facebook stock,
the stock market.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Things public that are publicly available. They're available to everyone.
Yeah. And the great thing about public equities or stocks is that you can buy them today and you can sell them 10 minutes later, right? They're highly liquid. Now, when you take some of that money, let's say you have $500,000 in your portfolio working for you in the stock market, and you listen to this podcast and you say, hey, I'm listening to Randy and he thinks I should, you know, out of 500 grand, I should probably have 250 in real estate, which I do. They can start taking some of that money out of the stock market and diverting it into different opportunities. But therein lies the risk, because they don't know how, they haven't done it before. So they have to go out and find gurus to give them information. Some are going to give them good information, some bad, some good deal flow, some bad deal flow. I can tell you one thing. If you get your first 20 grand out of your business and you go give it to your financial advisor and he buys Apple stock, you did really well. You bought a really good company, traded publicly. But if you take that same 20 grand, you can go out and make a lot of mistakes in real estate. And a lot of people do, which is why it's important to educate yourself. Listen to podcasts, read books. I highly recommend people read a book called Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright, just because it talks a lot about the benefits of real estate. And Craig, getting back to your question, why real estate? Okay. Why real estate? Because for most wealthy people or wealthy families, it's their rock. It's their anchor. It's their asset that doesn't fluctuate in price drastically like stocks can fluctuate. It provides income monthly or quarterly, usually monthly. It provides appreciation, meaning the value of the asset goes up over time. It provides tax depreciation. That's where the government lets you pretend that the real estate is going down in value and lets you write off a little piece of that value every month against the income. So now you're not paying tax on the income. And then finally, it's insurable. So if there's a flood or a fire or what have you, the property's protected through insurance. And you usually have a loan on it that you make monthly payments to, which include principal and interest. So every month you're paying down a little bit of the debt you have on that property. So if everybody could go out and buy 10 pieces of property tomorrow with 10 or 15% down, I promise you 15 years from now, they'd be really happy if they could handle the management of those assets, because all the mortgages would be paid down to zero. The income would have gone up 2 to 5% a year for that 15 years. And the value of the properties would be rock solid, and they'd be wealthy, you know, multimillionaire, have built a lot of wealth. So it's using the leverage, the tax, the cash flow, the curtailment of debt, and the appreciation value of the underlying asset. That's why everybody likes to jump into real estate. Any questions on that?
I wish that I would have believed everything you said at 30. So I knew what you said. I knew everything you said, but I wanted to see for it for myself. And it takes a decade to realize how this all works. So a decade after owning a piece of real estate, you see that your principal's been paid down. You see the cash flow, 2-3%, the rents are escalating. And a decade of doing that, like, holy shit, I wish I would have gone back and done more.
You know, and Craig, you were able to typically, you know, I mean, I know it's an advanced topic, but the tax abatement scenario, right?
Of course,
you're buying the asset with $100,000 down. The bank's giving you, let's say, $600,000 of that, right? You get now to write off, well, it depends on what the bonus depreciation is, but you get to then take the whole asset and start depreciating that over the scale that the government provides.
It's so many factors spiraling into, you know, it's like when you borrow on a car or you borrow on your credit card debt and you have 15, 20% credit card debt, it's a spiral which you can't get out of. Your assets worth less and you owe more and more over time. So the same way that credit card debt is terrible, it's the same factor, but in your favor for good debt on real estate. And broke psychology, and you know, unfortunately, Peter, your father, we brought this deal to your father, you know, I'm not trying to call it out, but like, he's like, nah, I'm going to pass. It seems risky or whatever. And it's like, we weren't taught this stuff. My dad never did things like this, you know? So it's like that typical Richard Kiyosaki, rich dad, poor dad. Poor dad's like, no, just work hard and put your money away and be safe, and debt is bad, you know? And then rich dad's like, no, debt is a tool. Leverage is a tool. You know, and no one taught Peter, no one taught you and I this.
Yeah. Hey, Craig and Peter, do either of you know anybody who got really wealthy by investing in the stock market?
No, I know no one.
Yeah. So I know hundreds.
I know no one actually either.
I know hundreds of millionaires and billionaires, hundreds in my network. And I don't know anybody who got really wealthy just off of being an investor, okay? But I know hundreds of people who have gotten very wealthy in real estate, okay? That is a broad brush stroke, but I just want to paint the picture for people that you can build wealth in real estate, and many people do it, and it's not really difficult. It is really difficult to outperform the market over time. The stock market, it's a publicly traded
commodity. So the price is always the price. You're not going to find a deal on Apple stock.
No.
You know, but the funny thing is when equities go on sale, when the market crashes, when Apple goes down, people sell it. And I always say that if you would just stay in the market, if you just buy the S&P 500 and never look at it again and just relook at it in 30 years, you'd be really happy. The problem is,
well, that's a fact, actually, Craig. They did a study on this, and the best performing portfolios were the ones where the person was either deceased or they lost access to that account.
Right. So passively managed.
So it's a buy and hold kind of like over 30 years.
The problem is the reason why people tend to make a lot of money in real estate when they buy right. And remember, you make money in real estate when you buy, not when you sell. And I know we're getting into the content in a minute. But if you had an app on your phone that would allow you via Zillow to sell your house at any given moment, like you wake up one morning, you know, Russia attacks Ukraine, you look at your house value, it just lost 30%. People would sell. They'd click that button. But you know what? They can't sell. It's illiquid. It's hard to sell. So they wind up living.
Yes. If you buy a bond, it pays you a coupon, which is an interest rate, right? If you buy a piece of real estate, you need to figure out what it pays you, what's net in your pocket at the end of the year, divide it back up into the price of the real estate, and you'll know what your return is. Now, the other thing to think about is if you can buy something at an 8% cap rate and borrow the money at 6%, what happens? You make a delta because you're paying the bank 6% on, say, 75% of the purchase price. And the difference, you're getting paid 8%. So you're making a spread on the money you borrowed from the bank. If the property paid a 6 cap, say it paid $60,000 on $1 million piece of property, and you had to borrow the money at 8%, you would never do it. You wouldn't do that deal because you're losing money on every dollar of leverage that you borrowed from the bank. You want to make a spread on the money you borrow from the bank. So whatever your interest rate from the bank is, you need the property to be paying you more. In this case, we're borrowing the money for 6.5% and the property's paying 8.5%, let's say. So then the next thing that we do when we evaluate it properly like this is after we collect the rent and pay the expenses and make the mortgage payment for principal and interest, how much is left over? Now, what that's called is your cash on cash return, okay? Cash on cash. What that means is when we're buying a $7 million deal, we're borrowing, you know, $5.5 million or $6 million and putting in $2 or $2.5 million of capital. What we make annually after paying the mortgage payment is the net cash to us divided not into the total price of the property, but just into the down payment. That's our cash on cash return. So let's talk about it from the sake of your investors on this deal. On this deal, right, our cash on cash return, let's say, is 8% in year one or 8.6%. That means if you put in $100,000, you'd be getting $8,000 back in year one, right? So that would be 8% return on your $100,000 investment. In this case, the return is calculated two ways. One is the cash return that's going to get put into your checking account on the first of the month. The other is paying down principal. So every month that we make the mortgage payment on this property, we now owe less on the property. So if we owned the property for 2 years and went to sell it, we would owe 300 grand less on it. Whatever your percentage of ownership in the deal is, you own that equity that you've paid off. So in this particular deal, the cash on cash return in cash is about 6.5%. And with the principal pay down of 2.1%, it means your total return is 8.6%. So in this real estate deal, you are making 6.5% in cash. You're making another 2% in principal pay down. And then the rent that the tenant is paying us goes up 3% a year. So that means that 3 years from now, if we went to sell it to somebody else, the rent would have escalated not 9% because it's compounded 3% a year. So 3 years later, the rent would have gone up 10%, which means you can now sell the building on a cap rate to the next investor and get a higher price. So now when you close on a property, now you collected money along the way, you paid down debt along the way, you paid no income tax on the money you got because of the government's ability to depreciate buildings, and then you sold the building for a profit and you get your share of that. There's so many ways to win in real estate. I don't understand why more people aren't doing it. And one of the reasons is because the financial markets are trained to have you just invest in equities. Things that your financial advisor at Merrill Lynch and UBS or whoever you bank with and do business with, they're trained to sell you the products that they offer. they can't sell you this deal. So they're not obviously going to be pushing people to take money out of their stock portfolio to go do real estate deals, because your financial advisor is incentivized to have you grow your portfolio and add all your money to it, because he charges you an annual fee, 0.5%, 1%, 1.25% as much for some people on the assets that you have at that firm. So if you say, hey, I listened to this great podcast and this guy, Randy, said I need to take out half the money, invest in real estate, they're going to talk you out of that any which way they can and tell you how risky it is, because you're cutting their paycheck in half,
right?
Right. Incentives matter. Everybody in finance is making a VIG, whether you make money or not. And I repeat, whether you make money or not. So you're not paying for good advice when you pay that 1%. You're just paying for advice. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And the other thing is, if most of you guys are probably, you people are paying a point on your money to be managed, right? And if the stock market returns 10% this year, your financial advisor collected 10% of your profit. But if the stock market only goes up 4% this year, your financial advisor still gets 1%. In other words, they collected 25% of your profit. And God forbid the stock market is flat this year, your advisor still gets 1%, which now he's reaching into your account and taking money out, even though you didn't make any money this year. That's the way the financial business works. And that's one of the reasons why people diversify into alternative investments. So going back on the list here, a couple of the points about this particular deal, okay? Is this particular deal, because the escalations in rent are going up annually, after 5 years, we are projected, because the rent will have gone up about 18%, we can go back to the bank and place a new loan on the property after 5 years. And now we can borrow more because the rent has gone higher. So the value of the real estate is more expensive. So we can borrow out and get all of our down payment back. And that is the way we've structured this deal. A lot of real estate deals, you could have your money tied up for a long period of time. And that's not bad as long as you're getting a good return on it. But in this particular deal, one of the things we liked about it is in 60 months, we're projecting getting you all your money back. Now you still own the same percentage of the real estate. You still have a nice profit built up or equity built up in there. But how much is your return, Peter, if you don't have any more cash invested? It's infinite. You're now making cash on the house's
house money.
Yeah, right? You know what I love? You know what I love, Randy, that you say? Sorry to interrupt. Randy said this once. It took me a while to realize what you said. You said money makes money, but the money that money makes makes money. So what does that mean to me? That means that in 5 years, when you take the money out, and this was a just to remind everybody, this deal is closed. It's not, we're just talking about it for illustrative purposes. But people told me, friends that invested, so in 5 years I get booted out. So what do? I get the money back. And I'm like, oh no, you still own the property. It blew their mind. How do I get my money out, but I still own the same pro rata share that I owned before? Additionally, yeah. They said to me, of the money that I got back out, that I get, don't you deduct what you've paid me? So you've paid me $8,000 a year for all those years. When it comes time in 5 years to get the money back out, wouldn't it be minus the money you paid me? Because it's almost like this.
Yeah. And Craig, I just want to say that's there's a little bit of speculation in here. It speculates that we're going to do it in 5 years. If we did it in 3 years, we might not get all the money back. We might get 80% of the money back. But if the interest rate is really inexpensive at 3 years, that might be a good time to make the move, right? So we've pro-forma'd it to be 5 years, get all the money back, but we could do it sooner or a little bit later. Just depends on whatever the right decision is for this particular deal. But this is definitely the way we pro-forma'd it. And you're exactly right. You still own your equity interest and get your monthly distributions.
And I want to remind you to say this later too. You always tell me, I've never seen, because I send you tons of pro-formas. I send you so much shit that I want to buy. You've never liked one of my things. So you're Mr. you're Captain No. And you always say to me, Craig,
I feel so bad.
You'll always say the same thing. I've never seen a pro forma I didn't like.
Yeah. So I feel so bad. Yeah. Craig sends me a lot of deals because there are a lot of deals and most of them I don't believe that there's bad real estate. I just believe that there's bad pricing. And so what Craig sends me is deals that are priced so bad. Yeah, they're priced so badly that I hate them. And my favorite term is there's somebody sells a property and they send you a deck to buy the property and they give you the economics, but the economics aren't based on what it is today. It's what they're performing you're going to do with it. So you're going to fix it up. You're going to spend money on capital improvements. You're going to get new tenants. You're going to raise the rents, and then it's going to make 7%. But they want you to pay them the price based on the fact that you're going to do that, but you haven't done it yet. If the property needs repair and needs to be re-tenanted, you should be paying the discounted price so that you get the upside. The audacity of sellers to do a pro forma for what it's going to look like when you own it after you do all the hard work is absurd. And so when Craig, when you send me these deals, you know, it's just like, I don't know where to start. You had a friend send one to me the other day, and there was so many things I didn't like about it. I was just like, where do I start? And,
well, mainly that the sponsors weren't even investing in the deal that they were offering to the audience.
That's very common. There's a lot
of unbelievable to me.
And,
like,
and there was no principal reduction. It was interest only. So it's like, if your employees would work for you for free, your profit would be far better, but they don't work for free. So, you know, if you could just pay interest only on your loans, your return is so much nicer.
A lot of sponsors. And when we say sponsors, guys, again, we're talking about the people that find the deal, manage the deal, buy the deal, contract the deal, get the debt. They work for their money, right? They sign on the debt. You as limited partners aren't signing on the debt. So God forbid something went horribly wrong. The bank's not calling you for this loan, right? So your risk is limited to the amount you invest, not the debt on the property. Quality of sponsor is everything. Track record, experience in the business, what type of real estate they're buying, what kind of investors they're looking for, how the deal is structured, how the fund is structured. So I've looked at so many hundreds of these, and I've been in real estate for 30 years, and I've been a sponsor, I've been a developer, I've built condos, I've built industrial, I've bought office buildings and sold them as condos, like you name it. I've just been around the block in real estate, and it was my side hustle. It wasn't my primary business. So you start to see the same theme in mediocre deals. And that doesn't mean, Craig, that doesn't mean that every deck that you sent me that didn't work out okay. Doesn't mean the investor got screwed. Like, things can work out okay. But when you're an investor and you're investing your hard-earned cash, your goal, your job to be the steward of your capital is to find the best-in-class deals that you can find with the best sponsors so that your capital is going to work with the highest probability of success, not just the mid-range or what have you. So investing in real estate is not something where you just say, hey, I'm gambling and I'm just going to throw $100,000 at 10 different sponsors.
That's what our buddy said, by the way. Remember when you looked at that deal for our buddy? He's like, worst case scenario, and you lose some money. I'm like, it's like that Warren Buffett quote, first rule of investing, don't lose money. Second rule of investing, don't forget rule number one. Capital loss is catastrophic.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And that's what he said to you.
Hey, and I've made mistakes too, guys, with my capital. I mean, I've done pretty well in life, and none of it was from getting rich quick. It was all getting rich slow, right? It was all placing my bets. You know, when you're in your 20s and 30s and 40s, you're buying your assets. When you get into your 50s, you're maybe still buying your assets, but you start reaping. And then there comes a time when you have enough money coming in on these deals that the money to fund the next deal is coming from the previous deal. So that's a really great spot to get to, but it takes time. You know, I was at your conference in Las Vegas last year, your Bulletproof Summit, which was really great, by the way, guys. Super amazing production you put on. Thanks. And I asked everybody for a show of hands who wanted to get rich quick. You know, a bunch of people put their hand up. I'm like, okay, that's in the room next door. With the bearded lady and the, you know, whatever. I'm not the get rich quick guy. I'm the get rich slow guy, but steady with cash flow and with enough barriers so that I feel super confident that even if I make a mistake, I make money. Okay. So continuing down this deal. This investment, we raised $2.6 million, of which four of us put in $1.1 million. And we're taking it. We took in $1.6 million of investors. And the pro forma over a 10-year period is to get back 2.7 times your invested capital. That's the MOIC Craig was referring to earlier. That's the multiple on invested capital. It's a very simple metric, but it basically says you put in 100 grand and you're going to get back 270 10 years later, and you're going to have had cash flow growth and tax efficiency along the way. I've never met a stock, although you can always look back and say the stock you should have bought. It's just that I don't know anybody who can look forward today and pick which ones those were, right? So the more they diversify, you're going to have some winners and you're going to have some dogs. And one thing that's important to remember, a lot of people invest and try to pick companies and pick winners going forward, and they're usually not successful. In fact, in most cases, they're not. And 70% of all stock market returns have come from dividends in the last 50 years. 70% of all stock market returns have come from dividends. Now, I wish I had a show of hands of all your podcast listeners and ask them who owned a dividend stock, and most would say zero, because they're investing for growth. They want to invest in high growth companies that are going to take off, and they're going to 5X, Tesla, 10X, Tesla, 20X, right? So I own 66 stocks in my portfolio. My stock portfolio is only 14% of my net worth. And every one of those stocks pays me money every month. These are the names that you see in your bathroom. Companies that make soap, companies that make oil, companies that make products that we as Americans consume on a daily basis. And those products grow and those companies continue to grow. And when they make a profit every year, they don't go out and buy 10 companies. They pay it back to their shareholders in the term called a dividend, right? Which is just a profit distribution from the company. All of my stocks pay me money. I'm an income investor. I'm not a growth investor. I'm not smart enough to pick the next Google or Facebook or SpaceX. So back to this. A couple of more points about this deal. So we're telling you about a deal and we're telling you that the returns are good and you're going to make 15% a year, you know, in all those different buckets of income. So let's talk about, well, who's in this property and what are they doing? Okay. So every piece of property that's a rental property is going to have a tenant. And the quality of the tenant is the quality of the lease, is the quality of the real estate deal. So there's two things you're buying. You're buying the sticks and bricks, right? That's the real estate. And you're buying the income stream for the tenant that's operating in the property. This particular tenant has been in the property for 30 years. This particular tenant is a big company, a multinational, that manufactures urethane coatings for hardwood and other products, you know, like a chemical company. The company pays $585,000 a year in rent, and it's a triple net property. What that means, triple net means net of taxes, net of insurance, net of CAM, which is known as common area maintenance. So those are the three N's. So what that means for you as the investor, you're getting the $585,000 in rent into the partnership, but you don't have to pay any bills out of that rent other than the tax return or what have you. The tenant in the property is paying the property taxes, is paying the insurance, is paying for the lighting, fixing the roof when it leaks, sweeping the parking lot.
The air conditioners.
Air conditioners.
The parking lot.
The leaky toilet, everything you've heard of. This tenant won't be calling us when there's a leaky toilet because they are responsible for it.
And by the way, someone in our mastermind, when we were talking about this, is like, why would somebody do that? So just so you know, like Aspen Dental and all these big DSOs, they don't own their real estate. This particular company is owned by private equity, and they can do better things with their money than 8.6%. For us, we're all excited about this, you know, but Aspen Dental doesn't own those real estate locations. They lease them back. So people could not understand, like, wait, do we own the business? Like, I don't understand it. Because the dentist that we were talking to just can't separate the idea that, wait, someone would be willing to pay you? Like Chick-fil-A's don't, or Walgreens, they don't typically own the bricks, sticks, and ground that they lease
in. Craig, I got to tell you this. So as you know, I own a bunch of pharmacies, right? I own Walgreens. Rite Aid, CVS. I've got like 10 of them. And to this day, my mom still calls me when she needs a prescription.
Yeah. You own a Walgreens. I know.
Somehow thinks that I own the Walgreens. And yes, I'm like, no.
I have a restaurant in town. They're like, it's a triple net. They're like, can you call Rose's daughter and get me a table? I was like, no, I own the sticks and bricks. I can't get the chicken parm at less money. Like, it's just baffles people. And this is why I'm so happy you're doing this, Randy, because the mystery of money is something that I don't care what class of society you are. Because I talk with charities that deal with inner city youth, and we have mastermind dentists who have paid $500,000 on their education, and they're all at ground zero with money. And by the way, you talked about the sticks and bricks. I do want you to talk about replacement value, because that's the thing that got me to buy my Stewart Center.
Yeah. So back to the quality of this particular tenant. So this tenant's been in business for years, has strong financials, has been in the property for years, and they're in a position where they own the real estate, they're selling it to us, and then they're going to lease it back from us for 20 years. Let me repeat that. 20 years. This isn't a 5-year lease or a 7-year lease with 3 options or whatever. This is a straight 20-year deal. So even 10 years from now, when our plan is to exit this deal and recycle the capital into another deal, there's still 10 years left on the lease at that point, which is just a whole lot of time. That makes this very valuable. This deal was very easy to finance. We got attractive financing at 6.5% on this deal. And So the value of the lease is one way to value the building. Another way to value the building is what would it cost to reproduce it? So we paid so little per square foot on this building. I think it was like $80 a foot or just under. $80 a foot. For those of you who are any familiar with cost of construction, you couldn't buy the land for $80 a foot, and you couldn't build the building today for $78 a foot. It would probably be $125. Inclusive without the land, you couldn't even build the structure for less than $125 a foot.
Yeah, my Stewart deal I bought for $146 a foot, including the land. So the land, even if the land was gifted to me by a wealthy uncle, I couldn't resurrect the sticks, bricks, and glass at $146 a foot.
So when we're valuing a real estate deal, we value at what we're paying for the land and the structure. In case the tenant went away, we'd have to get a new tenant, which we would usually charge more money to, because these deals, when they do a sale leaseback like this, they want a low rent for their business. So they're getting a lower price for their land. And therefore, if something ever happened to the tenant and a whole bunch of bad things would have to happen, we would be able to re-tenant the property in most cases at a higher rent than what we're buying it for. That's another one of the check boxes when we were evaluating this deal and deciding to do it. So going through here, Peter, if you want to get to the next slide, there's a few more things here. Our interest rate 6.5%. We talked about the cap rate is 8.3%. That's the yield. We talked about the purchase price of the property is all in, fully capitalized, about $7.6 million. And our investment term thesis on this deal is 10 years. And at that point, the plan is to sell it and return everybody 2.7 times their money. There's another thing there. At the end, when we sell the property, whether it's 7 years, 10 years, 11 years, whatever it is, when we sell the property, most of the investors will have the opportunity to roll that over through a tax-free exchange. That's a government legal law that says I can sell this property, put the money in the bank, and then go buy another property, and I don't have to pay the tax on the first one I sold.
So you defer the tax liability.
Defer means you're going to pay it later. Most people never pay the tax because they die with the real estate.
And they put it in a family trust or something. That's my plan. I don't want the money. Yeah. I want the income.
Yeah. So,
it's called a 1031 exchange, not to get tangential, but you could look that up on your own, because most people don't even know that that's possible.
10:30. Like when
you know, with Michael, my buddy Michael's a very successful real estate guy, and he's my best friend for a long time. And when he started doing this stuff, it was just like I couldn't understand this mystery of how he'd buy something for X dollars. I mean, I remember he bought a shopping center in Delray for $3 million. He re-tenanted it. He put in two or three new tenants. A year later, since the new tenants came in at a higher rent, he had it appraised, and he was able to take out his million dollars. So he owned it for free, and he made $700,000 a year or something stupid, net. And then he wound up selling it for $15 million. And I watched this whole thing like a magician doing some magic trick. And that's when I get so screwed in life not to know this shit?
It's funny you say that, Craig, because here we're talking to people about dipping their toe in the real estate business and all the different ways to do it. But your friend Michael, who's a great guy, I'm doing a deal with him. I was on a Zoom call with him just a couple hours before we did this podcast. He's a professional investor and a really successful one in real estate. And when, you know, you're always impressed by these guys that achieve these things, but you and Peter are really good at what you do, and you guys have achieved a lot and built a great net worth. And the people listening to this podcast are really great at what they do, running their business, keeping their patients happy. We all have our things that make us unique and special that we can really excel and be good at. And it just so happens that people that end up in real estate and are really good at it, they do make a shit ton of money.
Oh my God, they make so much money. But the problem is I look at Michael and say, well, Michael did this. I'm going to go out and buy my Stewart Center. And then I realize that when you lease a foot massage place, that you have to put that there's no private rooms on the lease. Because Michael's done this before. If you have a private room, your foot massage goes to full body massage pretty quickly. And, oh, by the way, don't do this and don't do – it's just crazy. So it's like – I mean, look, I'm happy that I've done my Stewart Center. I know I invited you on that, Randy, and at the time it wasn't the right fit for you. But when I look at these other deals that are plug and play, to your point, Randy, we're good at dentistry. And yes, there's probably 2 or 3% more I could make. But now I'm literally driving to Stewart, which is an hour from my house, to talk to the restaurateur on Sunday. For the 2 or 3% return, for the 40 grand or whatever that's going to be for me, it's just not worth it. You know what I mean?
You know, Craig, it's just like when you do a deal with a fund or a sponsor like this, the sponsor is getting a percentage of the profit, right? After we hit certain metrics, that's ahead of you because they have to get paid for doing the work. Right? They're running the company, they're boots on the ground, they're finding the deals, they're using their resources, they're managing the property, they're doing all the work, and they're getting paid for it. And we're paying them to do that so that we don't have to do the work, right? That's what you get through a fund structure or a direct structure like this. Peter?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Loud and clear.
Okay. What I was looking at is in on this slide right here, which I think is important to point out, is the escalator. Right. And I think some people get like, wait, what do you mean the rent's not the same every year? And I always tell even the dentist who have an owner occupied real estate lease with themselves, right? Meaning they have their dental practice and they have an LLC that controls the real estate, and they're the primary and probably the only tenant in that building. They still should have a formalized lease, and they still should have an escalator, because that is what gives the building worth, as you've just alluded to and all the aforementioned, Randy. But the escalator is an important piece as you're looking to evaluate these. Many will throw in there, for example, Craig, you spoke about the Heartland deals, right, that are all over LoopNet and Crexie right now.
And
they have a 5 cap investment, because everyone, dentistry is the darling of kind of investment real estate, right? Because it's, if you can find a dental investment building, because it was expensive to build, it's a pretty sticky retention, dentists pretty much stay there the rest of their life kind of thing. So meaning they can offer these at a 5 cap while interest rates are 6.5.
A very low return, yeah.
Right.
And Chick-fil-A, the same thing. People think Chick-fil-A is so cool that I'm willing to take a shitty return because it's Chick-fil-A.
But where I'm going with this, Craig, is that what they'll offer is an escalator every 5 years at 10%.
Yeah.
For example, right?
And just the audience understands, escalator means your rent goes up by 3% or 2% every year.
So in their scenario, it stays the same, exact same. If it's $100 rent a month, it stays the exact same for 5 years. Then it goes to $110 the next 5 years and stays that way. That is not a good way to have an investment in real estate. It's good for the Heartlands of the world or whoever's offering the building. But in this scenario, what you do want to have as an investor is an escalator that changes yearly. And typically you see them at 2, but to find one that's a 3% escalator is amazing. Because Randy, back to your point, if the value is created by the net operating income, and that is going up over time every year, then the building is inherently appreciating just by the value of the rent roll increasing.
It's exactly what's happening. And the reason why you want it to go up every year instead of once every 5 years for 10% is because it's compounded. So the 3% after 5 years is not 15%, it's 18%, because it's 3% on top of 3% on top of 3%. And that's what's driving the value of this particular deal. Now, this deal we got in actually back in summer, and we could flip this for a profit today. That's not our plan to do that, but we got a really good deal on this one. Like Craig said earlier, buying matters. And this just happens to be a great one. Let's touch real quick on the tax.
Yes. On the income, yeah.
Okay. So if you put $100,000 in this and you got $7,000 in income from it, you're not going to pay tax on that $7,000. So it's not going to go on your 1040 as part of your adjusted gross income, with which the government will give you a multiplier and tell you what you owe the government. Okay, so if your average person on this podcast is making $200,000 or $300,000 a year, they're probably paying somewhere between 20% and 32% in taxes, depending on their state and their situation. You won't pay any tax on the income from this because you're going to be entitled to your share of the depreciation. Depreciation is the structure the government gives us to pretend the value of the property went down. And just to double click on that, guys, the structure actually does go down in value because they get old. These buildings aren't going to be around 100 years from now. The land under the building appreciates because it will be around 100 years from now and there's no more of it, let's say. Okay. So that's why the government allows depreciation. But when you maintain real estate and keep it good, it can be good for 100 years or more. And in this case, you're going to be writing off the value of the real estate every year against your income, which means you will pay no income on the money you receive. So you put $100,000 in it, you get $7,000 deposited into your checking account, you know, 12 times a year, 7,000 divided by 12 rather, and you're going to pay no income tax on that money. That means that 7% return is going to feel like 9.5%. Now you start matching it up. Now let's talk S&P 500 for all the people out there going,
Randy, what about the S&P 500? Can I say something, Randy?
Yeah.
Let me pause you for a second. So you're saying you did a $100,000 investment. The investor receives a $73,000 of depreciation the first year. This pro forma was based on the fact that we were projecting bonus depreciation through cost segregation to be at 60%. This model was built in the 60% model.
Sure.
As we all know, and if you've been following along in the news, I don't know, Craig, is it officially passed now or not?
I don't know. I know it's close.
Bonus depreciation is more than likely going to revert back to 100%, which means that the tax advantages for this deal, this deal gets increasingly better, meaning that when this was created and we closed the deal, it was still stuck at 60%. A lot's happened in Congress in the past 3 weeks regarding depreciation.
Sure.
And so this gets even sweeter.
Sure.
Yeah. I love Randy. I want to interject one thing, Randy. And I don't know if you said this to the podcast audience, because I know we had you in so many different venues, but Randy will oftentimes go around the room and say, what's your largest expense in life? And most people are like kids, car, tuition, you know, but no one ever answers the correct answer, or no one ever provides the correct answer, which is
not one ever in my life in all the rooms that I've asked.
So what is the single largest expense item for all of us? Think about it, listeners. What is it?
It is your taxes.
Your taxes.
It is nothing else. It'll always be your taxes.
And another Randyism, and I'm going to probably misquote it, but Randy's famous for saying the tax code is 6,000 pages long, and of which there's 30 pages designed to tell you exactly what you should pay. And the other 6,000 or 5,970 or whatever the hell it is like these incentives, which angry people like to call loopholes. They're not loopholes. Whether you like Trump or not, He didn't cheat the tax code. He uses the tax code. He's a real estate professional. He pays very little taxes. Us dentists, I mean, my buddy Michael makes tons more than me. My tax bill is a factor of 10 times his.
Yeah.
And he's not breaking the law.
That's a great point, Craig. Now there's nuance to that. So let me just explain.
Okay.
So when you have passive income, you can use it to offset passive losses and vice versa. So you can't use the real estate depreciation against your dental practice income in every case. Now, Craig, you can because your wife's in real estate and you guys file a tax return jointly. Peter, you can. Okay, I can because my wife's in real estate. So you know, I've talked to a lot of your mastermind and I ask them, are you married? You know, husband, wife, can one of you get a real estate license and hang it with a broker and just do one deal a year, even if it's a house that you buy for yourself? Because now you can declare yourself a real estate professional. Now, if you're a real estate professional, which just means that you spend 750 hours a year in the business of real estate, that can be reading the newspaper, watching a program, listening to a podcast like this one, 750 hours a year in real estate. I know a lot of real estate junkies that have full-time jobs, but they at least spend 750 hours in real estate. Now, when they buy a piece of real estate and they get bonus depreciation, they can take that depreciation, put it on their tax return, and write off their ordinary income. So
their active income.
Yeah, their active income. So their earned income. So use me as an example. I haven't paid federal income tax in 5 years. I follow the laws to the T. I am squeaky clean. But I've been buying enough real estate and getting enough depreciation to wipe out my current income tax. Now, what have I done with that money, right? I bought a little bit of jet fuel, but not that much. And then what did I do with the
rest
of it?
Humble brag, I like that.
I reinvested. That was just my flex. You usually like that. So, I like that. So now I took that money and I reinvested it. Now, Peter, to your point, I'm making money on the money that I invested that I would have paid in taxes. So what's my return on that money? It's infinite. I have millions of dollars of taxes that I've saved that I've reinvested. And you know what the government, when the government writes these tax codes, they're called incentives. And incentives matter. They're to incent people to behave a certain way. What the government wants is more apartments, more commercial real estate. That's what grows our GDP and our economy.
Yeah, stimulate the economy.
So they're incentivizing us to make these investments, drilling for oil, solar farms, wind farms, multifamily apartments, commercial real estate, because the more of that, the better for the economy. And a lot of people look at it and say, it doesn't seem fair. And I say, get on board.
Hey, everybody. Registration is now open for our 7th annual summit. Is that right, Peter? Our 7th?
7th.
That's crazy. This time at the beautiful JW Marriott Camelback in Scottsdale, Arizona, you can immerse yourself in innovation, inspiration, unite your team, which is most important, and at the same time, earn 16 CE credits. Renew your practice, transform your life, June 14th and 15th. Registration's now open. Don't delay. These things always sell out. This one will as well. Go to bulletproofsummit.com. 2 days that will redefine your practice life. We guarantee it.
I love it. I mean,
taxes are my, don't get me started with taxes. This was a real estate podcast.
That's a whole separate thing.
Don't get me started on taxes.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, that's one of the big attractants of why I love real estate, Randy. I mean, yes, it's, I think when you do a look back, you can say, oh, it's been really good. But the tax abatement situation, right, is...
Yeah, I've been in situations, Peter, where I could have had, I had two choices. Either A, write the government $250,000 of income tax, or B, buy X real estate investment for 200 grand. They were equal.
Right.
Or 300 grand, I should say, because right. It was more. But there was such excellent tax advantages that I had that type of choice. It was crazy.
Again, if you're listening to this, the point is really just to bring education, because this is a high level deal. If you can understand this deal, and if you're listening to it on the actual audio pod, go and look at it on YouTube, because almost every pro forma is broken down like this. So when you start understanding this deal, you can understand the next deal that comes along.
I agree with that, Peter. And deals that you're going to see from your friends and relatives and on
the
internet
of your life,
or whatever.
For the rest of your investment life.
This is, and not even just real estate. The way this deal is laid out is an analytical snapshot of financial metrics that everybody needs to learn. And they do not teach this in school.
Right. Right.
I wish they would. I really wish they would.
I mean, it literally, I tell my kids that all the time. I was like, you guys are going to school for stuff that, like, I don't know, if I were to design a school, it would be completely different. Like how to start a fire, how to read a P&L, how to balance your checkbook, how to look people in the eye. Like,
yeah, shake hands, look people in the eye, like do what you say you're going to do, be accountable.
It's crazy. Yeah. But Randy, you know, I'm going to place this on the website. There may be another deal if it's this year, next year, but if you're interested and you want to potentially be involved in something that we undertake in the future, just put in your email. There'll be a form there. It's not created yet. I haven't seen it yet, but by the time this is posted, it will be there. Go to bulletproofdentalpractice.com. Look at the top navigation. It'll say real estate and maybe real estate investing. And then just put in your email. And if you're on that list and we have the bandwidth, we will send out notifications to potentially involve you in the next deal that will likely close much faster even.
Yeah. Other thing, Peter, I would say is that when we get the next deal, now that we've, you know, done this one with your group successfully, we will have a deck like this. We will do a webinar so that we will have a deep dive hour and a half discussion with a Q&A period. So real estate usually has a fuse, right, to buy a piece of property before by the time you decide to buy it and sign a contract and closing has time. So you'll have time to look at the deal, to listen to the webinar and to, you know, evaluate it, ask questions, that kind of thing. So
yeah, but if you want to be part of that webinar, you're gonna have to put your email in because we're not going to make it broadly available. So if you even just want to learn, you're not committing to anything. You're just saying that you're going to be able to be exposed to this.
Great distinction.
And yeah, and also too, Peter, Randy and I are investors in this as well and would be in the next one. So it's got to be good enough for us.
And we're not going to bring it to, if we're not investing a healthy amount, then we're not even going to bring it to the people.
Right.
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 Yeah. And we'll be the largest or second largest investor in every deal. Correct. The three of us. So, and you'd be investing alongside us on the line with this. So,
and Randy will make you watch every detail, like he'll make me watch every detail, because I'll tell him I like it, just sign me up, but he'll make me go through the webinar too, and I'll do it gladly.
Greg, remember when I had a deal for you and I came to your office and I put it up on the TV in your office and I made you sit there and I think he wasn't paying attention. So then I started making him click the buttons, you know, put the cursor in this cell, put it in this cell, because I didn't want him to do the deal based on Randy's doing the deal. I wanted him to frickin' educate himself.
Look at how well it served me though. Every single deal I've ever been in, I wish I would have gone back and written a bigger check.
Doubled it, right?
Yeah. Because it's, and look, I remember a real estate guy, you know, Dom, don't run to his last name, he's local. When we did that mentor on the lake deal, you and me and Lance, a long time ago, he's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, you're Dennis. Why are you investing in a supermarket and over here in Ohio? And who is this? I'm like, Randy and Scott. He's like, Randy Smith and Scott Blank. I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay, then forget what I just said. And then after that, I'm like, okay, screw it. I get to just eat the cake. But that's appreciate a true story. You know who Dom is.
Yeah. Hey, appreciate your confidence. And we all make mistakes every now and then. And we try to make as
the first one.
We try to make as few as possible. And that's the other reason, Peter, why I recommend that your people decide how much they want of their portfolio to be in real estate and spread it around. There'll be other deals. Don't overdo one deal. There'll be other deals. So
I like about these though too is that we've gotten the minimum down, because that first one I had to do was massive for me. It was so big.
That was a big,
you know, and if we can get it, even if we could get it down to 50, that'd be cool. I don't know if we'd want to do that, but it'd be cool.
Depends on the size of the deal. I like the idea of more people, and I like financial education. I like people being able to get involved in this and kind of enhance the community.
Well, Randy, I know you teach at the summits, Randy's Top 20, which goes over kind of your the culmination of all your years' experience and your financial teachings, right? Is your 20 top tips. I'm thinking that we have to bifurcate that, and now you have to have another course at the next summit that's going to be called real estate investing. Because Maybe. Everyone I ever talked to, every dentist is like, "Hey, Bolden, I know you have a lot of real estate. I want to do that too, right? I know I want to get involved. How do I do it? And so there is a healthy appetite for our profession because of, right, once you reach that point, you have discretionary income and you're like, where do I go now? Where do I go now? My practice is good. I don't want another new practice. I don't want to buy another location. You know, I don't want to just throw it in the stock market. Now I want to do some alternate investment, like you said. And so there is a healthy appetite out there. So I think that would be well subscribed at the summit, which we'll see you in Phoenix, right?
He hasn't committed yet.
I'm working on it.
Come on, Rand.
Well, he's got a lot going on.
Well, I just said Phoenix, and it's actually Scottsdale, but are they interchangeable? Yeah,
they're very close. It's like the Twin Cities. But anyway, speaking of Phoenix, it's June 14th and 15th. Tickets are selling really well, and I don't want people to get shut out. Bring your team. Get it today. That's bulletproofsummit.com.
And room rates are what, sub 200?
Sub 200, thanks to Peter Bolden's shrewd negotiation skills. But listen, I want to do something because, Randy, you are the worst promoter ever. Randy has a charity that he loves, and he every time someone donates so much as a dollar, it like makes him like so freaking happy. It's called warriorsailing.org, Warrior Sailing. And if you've ever heard him, the only thing he ever asked, if you've ever heard him and he's added any bit of value, if this is the second or third time and now you're feeling like, okay, Randy's actually moved the needle and helped me understand certain things, any donation to warriorsailing.org makes him extremely happy. So go ahead and get that link, donate $50, $5, $2, $300, $3,000. He is going to go ecstatic.
It's mental health for injured and ill veterans, and I'm super passionate about it. And warriorsailing.org or sbhappytogether.com, my website, where we raise money and awareness for that charity. Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Craig. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. All right, everybody. We will. That was a big one. That was a big one. We will catch you guys next time. And again, if you're interested, go to bulletproofdentalpractice.com. Check out the real estate section that will be up there shortly. Over and out.
Thanks, Randy. Thanks, Peter.
Bye, guys.